On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The baby boomers made a lot of babies, and now they're all grown up or nearly and hitting the American workplace in waves. 20-somethings with iPods and attitude ready to take on the world as they see it. The early line on Generation Y, ambitious, demanding, questioning everything, self-absorbed, multitasking, optimistic, and very well pierced and tattooed. They change jobs like their parents changed clothes. They bring their own rules. Some managers don't know what to do with them. Others say they may end up the highest performing workforce in history. Up next on Point, how they see it, Generation Y goes to work. Joining me from New York is Nadira Hira. She's a reporter for Fortune magazine and author of this week's big cover story on Gen Y in the workplace. Today's 20-somethings have their own rules, says her headline. You just don't understand them. Nadira Hira, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So what's the culture clash when these generations meet, when boomers, find their own kids in the workplace? What happens?
Well, it's funny. A lot of boomers actually complain that these Gen Ys are just impossible to handle and too much of a handful. But the funny thing is, if you're handling a monster in your office, you've probably raised a monster that's terrorizing somebody else.
Right. So when they turn around and look at their kids, not at home, not at the soccer field, not in the graduation ceremony, but in the workplace, next to them, down the hall, colleagues, what do they see?
Well, I think a lot of them see young people that are really hardworking, really ambitious, really enthusiastic, and really energetic. But at the same time, they have very high expectations. They want to know what you're doing to get them where they want to go. And a lot of these boomers really haven't had experience with that kind of entitlement before in the workplace, and it's something that really throws them for a loop.
And from the other side of the equation, when 20-somethings hit the American workplace today, how does it look to them?
Well, I think Gen Ys are really excited about going to work. They have all these expectations about what work is supposed to be because, of course, their boomer parents kind of invented the idea that work is supposed to be this fun, fulfilling kind of exercise that really rounds out your life. So Gen Ys really expect a lot from the workplace, but they're going to give a lot, too. And that's what they're hoping to sort of find when they come into corporate America.
So here I am. I'm looking at some comments from people in management in American corporate life.
Yeah.
Here's some comments that I came. Number one, respond to these, if you will. Why can't they just do things my way? That's like the number one. Now, maybe every generation asks that about those younger, employees coming into the workplace. But I get the feeling that that's a bigger question this time out. Why?
It absolutely is a bigger question. A lot of people have probably seen Generation Y with the letter Y actually written as Generation Y, W-H-Y, because this group actually will ask for a reason for why you want them to do whatever it is you want them to do. And the actual reason for that is because their parents have taught them to really be critical thinkers. And so when you say, you've got to be here at 9 in the morning, they're saying, well, why? If I have to commute for an hour and then it takes me another hour to get settled in, my coworkers are harassing me, I'd be much better off sitting at my house doing, an actual 8 hours of work instead of being in the office. Really, they're just trying to help you be more efficient.
And how does that get received when it hits the boss's desk?
In the past, I think it would have been very hard to handle. But now you're seeing a lot because of telecommuting and all the other sort of innovations in the workplace. You're seeing a lot of bosses say, hey, maybe there's something to that. I'm not going to meet them 100% of the way. But it's a negotiation. And you'll see a lot more managers open to that these days.
Okay, here's another one from Boomer Boss to Gen Y. Why do they seem to want too much from me too soon?
Well, it depends. Again, you're probably the parent of a kid like this, and you've told them that they should expect everything from you because you brought them into the world and you've loved them their whole lives.
So are we talking money or attention or
I think
everything?
It's all of those things. It's all of those things. They want money because, again, they want to have their best life sort of now. So if they're going to be working really hard, they want to know that when they're at home, doing whatever it is they want to do in their downtime, they have enough money to make that possible. They don't necessarily want to be CEO, but they want to have enough to live comfortably. At the same time, they've had mentors and coaches their entire lives. So they expect you to be a mentor and a coach. And so they are looking for attention. They're looking for feedback. They're looking for a relationship, a real sort of, you know, person who's there to help them and sort of shepherd them through their lives. And that's a lot for some managers because, of course, that's not something they've had to do before. But with this generation, we're finding that, one, they expect that, but two, it can have really great effect in, you know, in divisions and departments throughout corporate America.
We'll look at that more closely, that need for a real deep connection, maybe sooner than boomer bosses would have expected. But I'm also looking here at some expert in this field saying that these days, 20-somethings change jobs maybe 7 times before they finally land on one they're going to stick with for a while. They are much more willing to just say, I'm out of here, than many of their predecessors.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when you look at this group, their parents are there to catch them. The reality is that when you decide that this job is not working for you, there's no reason for you to stay and stick it out because you don't have a wife, you don't have kids, you don't have a mortgage. You're 25, you're 26, 29. In Manhattan, you can be up to 35. And you're
right.
Still...
You're young.
You've still got a roommate and you're still sort of living that young life. And so there's really no need for you to stay in a situation that you find detrimental. And with parents, I mean, a lot of these parents have raised their kids and were working at the same time. So they really want their children to be happy and to be home with them if they can help. There are some stats that say, you know, 73% of kids are receiving help from their parents, you know, financial assistance from their parents once they leave school. 64% are getting help with errands. I mean, it's really a very connected life that they're living.
Their parents picking up their dry cleaning, maybe.
Now,
dear,
absolutely.
Give us the basic demographics here. Who's headed out the door, which is leaving the American sort of corporate world eyeing this generation so closely? And then what is Gen Y exactly? Born from when to what?
Well, it's actually an interesting question. By the end of this decade, most of the estimates put about 64 million boomers being able to retire. Now, there's some question there because, of course, there's some notion that boomers don't want to leave the workplace.
Right.
They've done so well that some of them will be looking for contract opportunities, and some of that will offset, you know, this impending worker shortage. And, you know, even in researching this piece, I realized the worker shortage, even if it is coming, is a very sort of footloose number. Nobody knows what it's actually going to be, and it differs across industries and depending on who you talk to, which is why we sort of stuck with that number of who's going to be able to retire by 2010. And then when you look at Generation Y, there's a lot of real disagreement on where the years fall out. In the past, a generation was just 25 years. It was a chronological link. Nowadays, you have sociologists saying, well, it's actually more about what's happening around them culturally, politically, socially, and that's what defines a generation. So you'll see estimates that say it's 1980 to 2000. Some will say 77 to 91. We sort of went with 77 to 95 because that seemed to make the most sense and really mirrored that boomer generation that were, you know, the parents of this group.
And for the 77, yes, please.
I was just going to give you the numbers. If you use those years, you've got about 78.5 million boomers as of November 06, and you've got just about 80 million Gen Ys.
So they're just about balanced on that great big scale, and that means they range in age from still in school to 30.
30, absolutely.
You characterize them as and I don't know if this is your characterization or those you talk to, and those are boomers, but self-absorbed, gregarious, multitasking, loud, optimistic, and pierced, as in pierced everything. Pick that apart for us. Self-absorbed, really so much, we had the me generation not so long ago.
Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, a lot of people have called this the we generation, which it has its own aspect of self-absorption. But when you look at the boomers were sort of known for a word that my editor uses that I love, a phrase called navel-gazing. That was something that was very much part of the boomer culture. And you've seen all these articles over the years that the boomers have grown, just exploring every aspect of boomer life and boomer culture and boomer aging. And I think it's no surprise that their kids would have the same level of self-absorption. I don't actually think it's a bad thing. You know, it's sort of a matter of perspective, because if you think about it as sort of self-awareness, it's actually helped them to be a lot more aware and critical of their own lives than a lot of young people have been able to be at this stage.
Gregarious, I guess that goes with being the we generation and plugged in every which way through computers and everything else, Blackberries, you name it.
Absolutely. And they've been on teams since they can remember. I mean, they're part of a huge generation and they've been coached and they've been part of, you know, everything from the soccer team to the math team to every other team you can think of. So it makes sense to them that you should be spending time together. There are stats that say, you know, a lot of boomers in the workplace are only spending time with their coworkers outside of the office twice a year, which you guess is the, you know, the summer picnic and the holiday party. Whereas Gen Ys are, you know, hanging out with their coworkers once a month, if not once a week.
And then this one really interested me, optimistic. I mean, boomers may look at this generation and say, oh, my gosh, they're looking at war and global warming and, you know, millennial nightmares. Optimistic?
Yep. I think optimistic because they've been told that they can have an impact. And that's why you're seeing a lot of them say, I'm not just going to put my head down at work and hope for the best. I'm going to really make a change and affect the world around me. That's why I think there's such a huge emphasis on entrepreneurship with this group. It's the same reason why so many of them are doing lots of different things when they come out of school, not really necessarily sticking to the expected path. And I think that's where the optimism comes from. They know there's a lot of, you know, scary stuff coming in front of them. But I think they also know that there's an opportunity for them to make a change. And they get that from their parents.
Nadira, you're right in the middle of this generation. You're 26 years old.
Yep.
So what's your young judgment on your crew? Are they going to be the greatest generation ever? So, you know, just with different rules, just with a different style? Or do we have a generational clash that bogs things down here?
Well, it's dangerous territory, Tom. But I do think, actually, that, you know, one of the studies I read said that Gen Ys are more critical of each other than they are of themselves. We all sort of feel like, oh, my God, it's all gone to dust. But actually, I think based on my research, this was sort of a really personal story for me because I suddenly started to realize these are all things I'm going through. And actually, they can be sort of played to really good and positive effect. And I think there are ways in which, of course, this generation is going to be difficult to handle, just like any generation of 20-somethings. They come in with all kinds of overblown expectations. But I think if managed correctly, as a lot of the companies in the story showed, you know, it can really be very positive.
Nadira, I want to bring one more voice in with us, if I may, from Nashville, Tennessee. Jason Ryan Dorsey is with us, speaker, consultant, author, unofficial representative of Generation Y, 28 years old, motivational speaker. His book is My Reality Check Bounce, the 20-something's Guide to Cashing In on Your Real World Dreams. Jason, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
So, do you see the boomers up in arms about your generation, or are they going to figure this crew out and, you know, make great music together?
Well, right now I'm seeing the problem get worse before it gets better, because a lot of the baby boomers that I work with when I speak at their companies, they don't want to have to adjust. You know, there's kind of this mentality by the managers that, well, when I was 18, I went out and I had to go to college and get a job and figure it all out and start at the bottom. You know, who are you to come in here with your A average thinking you're going to be CEO in 2 years? You have to earn it. And so that's creating a lot of tension. And it, like Nadira said, it can be addressed. And there's definitely ways that I've seen and share to get Gen Y to kind of step up and let go of some of these unrealistic expectations and take ownership of making, you know, that success happen. But there's got to be some new communication out there, both to the managers on who is Gen Y and what makes us tick, but also to Gen Y on what is it really going to take to be successful out there. Because when I go and speak at the colleges and I hear these young people say, you know, I'm going to go out and I'm going to be CEO in 2 years, or I'm going to start a company in my dorm and be a billionaire. Those are all great things and good things to strive for. But when that is truly your reality and you show up that first day of work and you walk up to the CEO and you say, you need to know who I am, I'm going to have your job next year.
is that the attitude? I mean, yeah, Nadira spoke to it. You go straight to it as well. Hierarchy doesn't have a lot of clout with this crew.
Well, we've been told that we have the same value as somebody with a much bigger title. And a lot of the executives I get to work with will say, I don't get people your age. You want to go to lunch with me? It took me 10 years to go to lunch with the past CEO. You know, but there's really this belief that, as Nadira said, we have as much value to add as our predecessors. And so we need to just step up and make that happen. But the reality is, in the real world, nobody cares if you got straight A's in that second year English class. They want to know the value you're adding to their company now.
Nadira, you've got a story very much like that, Nadira, where the sort of stereotype, at least, is that the 20-something sort of shows up the first day at work and heads right in and sits down on the boss's desk and says, hey, what's up?
How's it going?
Right.
Well, when you think about, you know, this group, and again, they've all been to school, they have all these sort of ideas that they're coming in with, and a lot of them are actually great ideas. A lot of them are ideas that, you know, that can help companies. But Jason is absolutely right. You know, there's a strategy to the way that you handle yourself in the office. And I actually found with this story, and even with the blog that we launched in conjunction with this story on Fortune.com, I had so many young readers writing me and saying, this is exactly what I need because I cannot figure out how to make my way here. You know, I have a certain way that I've been raised to behave, and it doesn't necessarily jibe with what's going on in the office. At the same time, I think a lot of managers have been a lot more open because they are parents and they are able to relate. So they will sit down to lunch and say, you know, let's have a conversation. And I talked to tons of managers, you know, at KPMG, at Merrill Lynch, at Goldman Sachs, who said, you know what, I do take them to lunch. I'm amazed. I just have to sit and reflect and think, gosh, 20 years ago, if I wanted to go to lunch with a, you know, a senior manager in my firm, that was so not going to happen. But at the same time, they realize that it has a real effect on the path that these young people take. And of course, retention is a major issue, you know, as we head into this potential worker shortage and as you think about how important it is for companies to build loyalty. So they really do have to kind of step out of their way to get these young people to commit to their companies.
Let's broaden the circle of Gen Ys here right now. Dylan is calling in from Boone, North Carolina. Dylan, good to have you. You're on the air, my friend.
Thank you. Definitely in agreement. I feel that my generation, and myself included, and it's not a very great thing to fess up to, we don't feel like we need to go in and get our hands dirty. We want to get out of college and go ahead into the workforce and do what we've wanted to do for so long.
So you're excited. How old are you?
I'm 21.
And have you got a particular job, a career in mind yet? And are you going to sit down on the boss's desk the first day on the job and tell him how to do it?
I'm not. I feel like I'm a little more modest than that. But, I'm a journalism major, so I want to go in and, work for a newspaper. And but I don't want to start from the bottom. And I know I have to, but I don't want to. And we've been taught that we don't have to. We've been taught that we could do whatever we want to, and it's a great mindset to have, but it's not realistic. And I know that I'm probably going to be starting off going to town meetings and writing about the most boring things possible, but it's realistic, and it's what I'm going to have to do.
Hey, God bless you. You're jumping in there. Jason, what do you say to Dylan? He does not want to start at the bottom.
Well, I think the big thing that Dylan is honest about is the fact that he knows he's going to have to start there, but he wants something bigger. And the question is, how bad does he want to move up? And if he wants it bad enough, what I've seen really work when I speak at these companies is asking for those extra opportunities, going after bigger stories, trying to create that opportunity where you can demonstrate that you have the skills and abilities to end up like a Nadira with 26 and a cover story of Fortune. She didn't get there, as I know from talking with her, just by doing the minimum. She went out there and she challenged it and she kept learning. And you know, that kind of attitude that you have to keep learning and you have to keep working and there's going to be late nights, maybe some Saturdays, is actually pretty counter to the general idea that we can just go and work when we want and it'll just happen, because that's what we've been told is the truth. But we've really got to go out there and put our best effort. And it's not based on our past grades or what our parents told us, but it's us going in there every day with that attitude, asking for opportunities, asking questions, going to our boss and trying to find new ways that we can get better and ultimately add value to the company.
And Nadira, you're right, though. It's interesting, the attitude about effort and hours, a kind of ambivalence here, a high value in this generation on life outside of work. We came across some people talking on the ABA Journal, the Bar Association. Here's an anonymous lawyer, New York City law firm, saying they're not motivated to work hard. They want high salaries. Those once only went to people who really put out the effort. Here she's saying few young lawyers are still at the office after 5 o'clock. Quote, you can walk down the hall and only partners are there. What's up with that?
Well, you know, the reality is what it translates into is motivation. It depends on what you want in your career. And for a lot of these young lawyers, they're not necessarily interested in making partner. Wally Schwartz, who's one of the executives that I spoke to from Skadden, who is in this story, actually said to me, we've had to adjust our approach because we've realized that we were always looking for people to come in and make partner. And these young people are saying, gosh, let me figure out what I can learn in 2 or 3 years and then figure out how to parlay that into something different, better, you know, else. And that's really the attitude these days. But at the same time, I think you've got to realize these are the young people that grew up without their, you know, parents necessarily being in the home. They know how much, you know, your commitment to an office can actually result in some drawbacks, some setbacks in your life. You know, they watch their parents
in a marriage, in a family.
In a marriage and a family, you know, even in your own relationship with the company, they watch their parents have, you know, 30-year relationships with companies and have that not turn into anything. So you know, they're really interested in making sure that they invest in every aspect of their life.
Are we going to see a different attitude toward work? Is it going to break up that sort of 60-hour week that some companies demand? Will that just be impossible with this generation, Nadira?
Well, actually, I don't think it's going to be impossible. I just think it's going to necessitate a different way of looking at work. These guys are going to be working on Saturdays and Sundays, but they're going to be doing it from their beach houses. You know what I mean? They're really thinking, you know, I check my email. I do all of those things at home, but
so
I'm
why
not
be
necessarily
there?
In the office. Exactly. Why be in the office? And it's really about thinking about work creatively and letting that motivate you. So, yeah, I completely understand Dylan's point about not wanting to be, you know, at covering the police blotter. But, you know, if you go out and you do those assignments that are extra, you do them for free, you do them for other companies or other papers, and you really just push, you actually can make a huge leap in your career. And I think that's what you'll see with Gen Ys. They're going to do lots of work. They're just not going to do it the way you expect.
This New York lawyer saying she's got the Gen Ys asking whether work can wait until Monday. Is that a problem? Or refusing to work with certain partners. Interesting. She says she's often turning to colleagues and saying, we never did that. let's get a call from Anderson, South Carolina. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm a mid-level manager. I've been in Fortune 500 companies probably for the last 20 years. I've been in the manufacturing business for over 30 years. I've got a big problem, and the problem with the Gen Yers is that they go through the fast food phase, the working phase. They go through the retail phase, and I'm not talking top-level management candidates or anything.
You mean they work at Starbucks, or they work at The Gap, and then they come to you?
There you go. And you know what? By the time they get through those stages, they're ruined.
What do you mean ruined?
They understand what they understand when they come to me is they understand what a break is, they understand what a lunch is, and that's what they come to work for their breaks and their lunches. They come to work 1 minute before they're supposed to start. They're at the time clocks. The minute the clock or the hand hits it, that telltale sign at the end of the day when they're supposed to go home. I can't get them to work weekends. It's difficult.
Whoa, there's a harsh judgment, John. But let me ask you: many generations have started out working at diners or, you know, at the retail shop, at the hardware store. So that's not new.
I agree with you, Tom. But here's the problem: I've got two girls right now that are in the retail business, and these managers are treating them like they're in servitude. And by the time they get to me, when they get into a job where they may make a career out of it. By the time they get to me, and I'm in an assembly manufacturing operation, by the time they get to me, these kids have already got it into their head that managers, you know, are there just to harass me and to make my day miserable.
Okay. Jason Ryan Dorsey, here's a consulting moment. John feels like his Gen Yers have been ruined in, low-wage servitude. They get to him, and they just want the lunch break. What do you say to him?
I think John's observation is not unique, and frankly, that's the general observation I hear from managers. Now, I don't think it's because of the industry that they were in previously, such as retail or fast food. I think it's bigger, and I think it's a little deeper, and that's the idea that they thought they could go out and things would just be perfect. They'd get respect, they'd get promotions, they'd get all these things. Well, all of a sudden, people are yelling at you at the line when you're trying to serve French fries or coffee. It starts to change how you see the world of work. In fact, the reason I wrote my book, My Reality Check Bounced, was because so many of them went into the workforce with these expectations, and then it didn't happen, and they didn't know what to do. And one of the ways they respond is they end up at John's company a little bit bitter, a little bit disheartened, and suddenly they focus on lifestyle as opposed to productivity. And that's where it gets really frustrating for boomers, because boomers are all about work ethic. We measure success, or as baby boomers do, in hours per week. Well, Gen Y in the workforce doesn't. You know, we measure success on our terms as we define it, and that's not hours per week. We want not only lunch breaks, we want the little breaks during the day, and we want to be recognized for doing the minimum. And it's creating, like I said, a lot of conflict. And, you know, I know that Nadir has gotten a lot of research and on this, and a lot of companies say they're responding. I would say that's unusual, not so much the status quo. Most of the companies where I go and speak and they bring me in are in John's situation, and they're going, my God, Jason, we pay these kids fairly. Why can't they just show up, pull their pants up, you know, get here early, stay a few minutes late, and get the job done?
Hitch them up and do it. Nadira, what do you say? What's the answer here?
Well, I think Jason, you know, makes a good point. A lot of the companies that I spoke to, you know, they are Fortune 500 companies. They're huge. They're sort of the big names that we cover all the time. And so, of course, they're going to be at the vanguard of this kind of issue because they're not only do they have the resources to deal with it, they're feeling it on a major level. I think what John is talking about is interesting, though, because I think this is where you have the opportunity to sort of exploit that that need for connection and relationship that we talked about earlier. One of the things that I heard managers say over and over again is that I was so frustrated until I sat down and I talked to this kid. And I said, you know, I understand that you don't want to be here more than 1 minute before, you know, you've got to check in. But but the reality is, here is why, coming back to that generation why, here's why I need you to be here. And that actually makes a huge difference, because that's what their parents have done with them. They've sat down and had, you know, high-level negotiations when it comes to chores and all of these other things. And a lot of times I think it actually makes a huge difference, because suddenly that Gen Y is invested in you because they feel like you're invested in them. And that can actually go a long way for solving some of the problems that smaller companies, you know, or divisions have.
So open that big conversation, maybe that endless negotiation that they are used to from their own youths at the knee of the boomers. Let's go to Aaron in Boston. Hi, Aaron. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Great. What do you know?
My question is, I hear a lot of talk that sort of reflects the early 20s or the mid-20s mindset and sort of developmental stage, but my question is, to what extent are Gen Yers able to open up and see that there might be learning to be had outside of what I get out of the workplace, but what do we as coworkers from a variety of different perspectives come together to build in the workplace?
Aaron, how old are you, if I may ask?
I'm 33.
And so you're sort of right on the in the boundary zone here between X and Y. What do you see in 20-something colleagues?
I see some of that orientation towards self, I think. But I think some of that is just the nature of what it feels like to come into the workplace in your 20s. And I think I probably had that. But I feel like I went in with a sense of humility that I learned from people that were older than me. And so I was able to, at some point, sort of set my ego aside and realize that maybe the people who I worked with had something to teach me. And in fact, they did.
Aaron, that's great. Let us pick it up. Nadira, what about it? I mean, on the one hand, you write, these are young Americans who very much want to get into that conversation with others and superiors in the company. On the other hand, I'm looking here at, you know, kind of HR website comments, you know, that they don't have the little niceties. They won't even smile when they say hello.
This comes back again, I think, to that investment issue, because they are very quick to shut off or you know, shut down. So if they come in and they feel like there's already a sort of level of hostility, or they aren't necessarily getting, you know, responded to or even acclimated, they will sort of shut down and you aren't going to get that smile. But again, I think it only really takes one or two, you know, sort of strong relationships developing for that change to come.
Jason, how about it? Ready to partner?
Well, what I think Aaron's alluding to is the fact that if we as Gen Y don't feel included, don't feel involved, don't feel valued, we do tend to kind of go off in our own direction. And I think that we – and this is hard for baby boomers to get – but we have never, ever in our lives for a moment thought we'd work for one company our entire life. That is a major, massive shift.
Yeah.
Because basically what it says is, if we don't like our job there,
we're out of
we
here.
Quit.
Yeah.
Because there's another
See
one.
See you later.
Right. I want to turn to Naples, Florida right now, and Tamara Erickson. We bring a boomer into the conversation. She's a consultant, expert on changing demographics in the workforce, president of the Concourse Institute. She writes for the Harvard Business Review, just completed a research project entitled Project YE, as in Engaging Young Employees. She's co-author of Workforce Crisis, How to Beat the Coming Shortage of Skills and Talent. Tamara Erickson, thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom.
So you're the boomer on the panel. What do you see in this generation in the workplace?
Well, you know, I was laughing listening to Jason. Jason, I think you and I ought to do a tag team effort, because Jason was saying he coaches wise to let go of unrealistic expectations. I'd have to say, from my perspective and research, I'd spend a lot of time coaching boomers to get over themselves. I think the whys are great, and I think a lot of the issues that we hear are based on boomers who look at whys through their own boomer eyes.
Sure.
And boomer expectations.
So how is this generation then going to change the workplace as their new rules and attitudes settle in, filter in, maybe one day become the norm?
Well, you know, we've got kind of a happy coincidence in some ways. As you just said, Tom, we've got a lot of boomers who are getting ready to retire, or at least beginning to think about cutting back in some way. And many of the things that the Y's are pushing for, like working fewer hours or working more flexible locations, et cetera, are actually going to be pretty consistent with what boomers will want one day. So if boomers can let loose of some of the "that's not the way I did it when I was your age"
right.
kind of stuff, I think they're going to see that this is a fantastic addition to the workplace.
And the workplace itself, is it going to be, what, even less hierarchical with, as the Gen Y comes in, ready to sit on the boss's desk on the first day?
You know, I think it will. Technology actually allows that to be. What the Ys tend to do is they'll share information with people that they think would benefit from the information. So if they have an idea that they think would benefit the boss, they have no hesitation to send it. Now, you know, what I would say to a boomer is, how do you interact with your kids? Don't you encourage them to speak up if they have an idea? And most boomers would say, absolutely. I absolutely have. And so while you're seeing in the workplace, are Ys behaving with boomers in the workplace the way they've always behaved with their parents? We've encouraged our kids to speak up. We've told them they can do anything they set their mind to. We've given them that optimism and that sense of self-empowerment. And then we're shocked when they show up in the workplace and actually do it.
Nadira, you point out that a lot of Gen Y really wants to see a vision in a company. That to be attracted, mm-hmm. It's got to have a big, not just message, but something bigger than message going on. Speak to us about that.
Well, I think this comes back to that issue of investing in a company because, as Jason said, we're not looking to be at a company for our entire careers. We've got to know that while we're there, that time that we're spending is going to make a difference. And it's hard to do that if you think that that the company you're at doesn't care about its employees, doesn't care about the environment, doesn't care about, you know, the impact that it has on the world. And the flip side is also obviously true. If you do feel like the company has a real message and a real mission and does real good, it's a lot easier to justify staying there and sticking it out.
Jason, we've also heard a lot about how a kind of longer youth is a big piece of this. You said that people come in and judge on the first day at a company whether or not they're going to stay by putting off marriage and children and mortgage and all that. This is a generation with a lot more mobility and flexibility when it looks at the workplace.
Yeah, I call it delayed adulthood. You know, we really don't think we're adults, and what I'm hearing is until we're 30. You know, basically up to that point, we can retreat home as much as we want. Mom's thrilled to have us. She wants to cook our favorite meal. She didn't even change our room. She wants to make up for lost time. And kind of the joke among my friends is, you know, have you gone on a date yet where you had to go back to meet their parents and it was the first date because you were at their house?
Right, right.
You know, so there's the interesting thing is, and I think Tamara kind of alluded to this, is there's really no downside for us behaving this way. We're fine with it. There's no social consequences from our peers if we're out of a job. It's better to not have a job than, as Nadira said, work for somebody who's out there selling something that's bad for the environment. And our friends respect that. And so we can kind of just bounce around until we find what works for us without any financial consequences or social ones that we see. Sure, they're there. But at this point, we don't see them because, you know, we already spent 8 years getting a 4-year degree. We might as well delay everything else.
Mm-hmm. And Nadira, I also hear something here, less of the loner economy. You call it the we generation or something like that. But maybe a generation of demographic much, we think of this as more European or Japanese or something, where it's more group-oriented, communicating a lot. Wanting to be in the group at work or beyond work a lot, not that single Willie Loman, death of a salesman kind of guy and gal trudging in on their own hook all the time.
Yeah, definitely not death of a salesman. I mean, when you think about this group, and technology obviously has a huge, you know, effect on this, we are so used to being connected all the time. I'm walking down the street, you know, with 8 million other people in New York City, and I feel like I have to call someone on my cell phone because I'm alone. You know, that's a very Y way to behave. If I'm at work, I am open, I'm IMing my colleagues, my friends, I'm working at the same time, sending emails back and forth. You know, that's really the world that we live in. It's super, super connected. And more than ever, you can really see that Ys have a kind of, you know, and I talk about it in this story, a kind of, you know, uniform sensibility. We all watch sort of the same shows. We have the celebrities in common. And now more than ever, you've kind of got this, you know, this personality that stretches across socioeconomic status, across geography, across all the barriers that have traditionally sort of separated people in any given generation. generation. So of course it makes sense that you know, we're a lot alike, more than other generations, I think.
Does it really stretch across socioeconomic status? I mean, you're talking about hopping and jumping from job to job, going back to the parents, assuming they're there, that they have room for you, that they can kind of support you. I mean, aren't a lot of people in your generation, too, going to be marching into jobs that aren't this kind of corporate, you know, milk and honey possibility at work, but just tough jobs?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's absolutely right. And I think the thing that does stretch across socioeconomic status is actually that persona. And because a lot of young people who aren't necessarily, you know, able to go home to their parents have been exposed to the same dreams and the same aspirations on an MTV, on a VH1, you know, they really actually have more ambition in those areas. And I think it's a very positive thing, because even if you are in a family where you can't necessarily come home to your parents or you don't have the means to do a lot of the things that I write about in the story, you're exposed to them. You see them on television and you're told, if not by your parents, then by your teachers and, you know, by the people that you interact with, that you have the right to dream big. And I think you're going to actually see that have a much bigger effect with this generation than it has with any generation before.
Let's go to Robbie in Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, Robbie. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just going to comment. I've enjoyed your program, but as a parent of four young adults, three 21-year-olds and a 19-year-old, I'm very optimistic. I think we've got something to look forward to with this generation as it comes through. I think they're all brave, they're ambitious, and they're socially conscious. I've got one child I just talked to a few minutes ago that's in Ireland getting ready to take a summer job there as an architect, and I've got another one that's leaving Wednesday to take a job in New York City. One that just got back from 4 months of work in public health in the Dominican Republic, and my fourth is going to Chile later this summer.
Wow, plenty of ambition in all kinds of directions. So you see a new great generation coming up here, Robbie.
I really do. I feel very lucky. I was joking with my wife last night. I wouldn't want to do it again. It's been a great ride and a lot of work, but I'm very proud of what we've got, and I think My children's friends are equally as motivated.
That's great. There's a big vote of confidence right there. Tamara Erickson, you talk with the corporate world. Do they share that confidence?
Well, not quite yet, I think, many of them. I think what Jason's seeing in terms of some of the frustration is more evident in executives today until they remember what it feels like to be a parent. So to the extent they're looking at these guys in terms of, here's how I behaved as a young employee, they're driving them nuts. They see them as impatient, underqualified, disrespectful, slackers. I mean, all kinds of negative connotations that come out with stories that just blow boomers' minds when they, for example, go down to the lobby to pick up a candidate that they're going to interview and find the candidate sitting there with her mother, who drove her over to the interview. Now, a boomer immediately interprets that, well, the person is not independent, can't think on her own feet. The reality is they're probably best friends. In fact, they're probably going out to lunch afterwards. Wives like their parents. They like adults, and they tend to interact very positively with them. There's no reason to interpret that as a negative capability of the why. It simply is a reflection of the positive relationship the why probably has with the boomer adult.
So let's get over some preconceptions and get to work here. Tamara Erickson at the Concourse Institute, part of the Concourse group there. It's been great having you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Let's go to Megan in Norwich, Connecticut. Megan, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I am a Generation Y.
Yeah.
I'm 28 years old, and I'm an oddity. I've been with the same company since I graduated college on time. I've been financially independent from my parents since I was 19. And
what the heck's wrong with you, Megan?
Well, the point is that I'm willing to put in the extra work to get where I want to go, and that does make me stand out from my some other kids my age.
So I mean, seriously, I bravo to you, but you feel like an oddity? You feel like you are the exception in your peer group?
I definitely am, and to be honest, I use that. I use that to make myself stand out more in the corporate world.
Jason, what do you say to Megan here? Does she have a winning strategy, sort of going counter trend with her generation? Will she be the Napoleon Bonaparte of, you know, the corporate next era?
Well, Megan, first of all, congratulations on graduating on time. I'm thrilled. You are an oddity, and your parents are proud, and so am I. But I think you've discovered a secret, and it's a secret I allude to in my book, and I talk a lot about in my speeches, and that is if you want that opportunity, it's there, but you've got to put in the effort to make it happen. And that link, that connection between effort and results is what a lot of Gen Y people just don't get. They think it's just going to happen. And while Tamara said that, you know, the mom drove her there and they're probably best friends, I totally agree. But one of the things I've found is many Gen Ys I meet don't know how to fill out the job application. That's why their mom did it. You know, the most photographed or photocopied page in my book is on how to tie a tie. That's when we get all the comments about, because a lot of that was always done for us. We were saved and by our parents. And so you going out there and saying, hey, I know if I put forth this effort, it's going to work out. It's going to pay off big dividends. That's the message we've got to get out. And not only as parents, which is why so many parents buy my book, but it's why colleges have to do it. There's this belief that if you just go to college and graduate, things are going to work out. Well, it's not going to. There's going to be adversity. And when you recognize that you can make it work, they'll be like you, Megan, and maybe not so much of an oddity, but they'll be the norm because they'll be out there taking responsibility for making it happen. And that's ultimately what's going
to
pay off.
Megan, good luck to you. Nadira, I wonder, though, if there's not a kind of third way. I mean, is it either, you know, you're not at grips with the challenge of the workplace and you're a slacker, or you're doing it completely traditionally and putting on that tie, are the Gen Ys going to come up with a sort of a third way, a new way of getting it done?
Absolutely. I think there's absolutely a middle ground, and I think that's what you'll see with a lot of Gen Ys, because we're not slackers. You know, that's very much the Gen X label. Don't want to steal it from them. We definitely have a different approach to work, and we are interested in work. We want to succeed at work. So I think that you'll see a lot of these young people, a lot of us, as we sort of get into corporate America, really making a decision to compromise on certain things, but to stick to our guns on others, the things that are really important to individuals, whatever they might be. But I think Megan is absolutely in the right place right now, sort of leveraging her position to succeed at best. But I think she'll also find that by the time we get into our 30s, you know, her peer group will have caught up. I mean, event people will have to get married eventually. They will have to settle down. And I think you'll find that you know, all those compromises will pay off eventually. Really, if we're guilty of anything, it's the overshare, you know, as I call it, which is that boomers are most shocked by the fact that we just talk about everything. You know, we want to have discussions about why it's taking us so long, why we're still, you know, attached to our parents. And perhaps that's a little bit dangerous because we're putting too much out there. But I think that, you know, in the long run, it sort of helps us process a lot of those issues, and it'll probably help us overcome them.
This piece with the parents surprised me in your article. I have to say that's kind of new to me. But parents, companies courting parents in addition to Gen Y employees. You want the employee to stick around longer, sell their parents on the job, even welcome them into the workplace.
Absolutely.
On the first day at the job, you found a company saying, hey, bring mom and dad.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny when in discussing the parents as Tamara was doing, it's interesting because so many of the young people that I interviewed for this story, I would ask about their parents and they would say, well, I was just chatting with my mom on my way into the interview. She was giving me some advice. And I thought, I love my mom. I talk to my mom, you know, probably every other day. But it was just interesting. I don't know that I would call her on my way to go interview a CEO and say, mom, what should I say to David Neilman or Warren Buffett? But, you know, that's really what's happening here. And parents really, you know, they're a huge, huge part of what Gen Ys are doing in every aspect of their life. So it makes sense, you know, that they'd be part of work. And Gen Ys really look to their parents to help them, to give them advice and to sort of guide them because they have always done that, you know, throughout their kids' lives. And so companies have really caught on, you know, at Merrill Lynch, you know, which is one of the companies I spoke to at length in the story. One of the executives talked about, you know, running into a colleague at lunch and realizing that the colleague was there with a recruit and his mother and thinking, oh my gosh, you know, this is a different world. But that's what they've got to do to succeed and to get these Gen Ys invested and to get them to stay.
Mm-hmm. Nadira, we've got 20 seconds. You quote one big thinker here saying, you know what? This, in the end, is going to be the most high-performing workforce in the history of the world. What's he pointing to?
He's pointing to the fact that we are ambitious and energetic and enthusiastic and really, really, really hopeful. So if you can harness that and use it to you know, to good effect, it's going to have a huge impact on corporate America. And I think he's right.
Well, we hear all that, and it's exciting. We wish good luck to the whole generation. Lord knows we're all going to need you, them, us working together here. Nadira here at Fortune Magazine, great to have you. Great piece.
Thanks
for being with us today. And Jason Ryan Dorsey, the book is My Reality Check Bounced. Jason, good luck on your crusade to bring everybody on the ship here. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.